Turner and Tarrant County Water Control and Improvement District Number 1 versus Hoff, Inc. and others.
May it please the Court, Mr. Shannon Ratliff, consent argument for petitioners, he can reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the Court, my name is Shannon Ratliff and I am here on a case that arose out of Navarro County. And I represent the Tarrant County Water Control and Improvement District Number 1. That district is the owner and operator of the Richland Chambers Reservoir in Navarro County. The case arose in the district court in Navarro County by suit by Hoff, Inc., by Bar J.B. Company, by Mr. James Breithaupt, by his mother, and by his aunt. And in that suit, the plaintiffs took the position that the defendant water district had inversely condemned the minerals underlying an 80-acre tract that was in a portion of which was in the reservoir. The trial court severed the question of whether there had been an inverse condemnation of the mineral estate and of the plaintiff's interest, and held a separate trial with regard to that matter. At the conclusion of the separate trial, the trial court ruled that there had been no inverse condemnation of the interests owned by Bar J.B. Company, a leasehold interest, by Hoff, Inc., a leasehold interest, or by Mr. Breithaupt, but did hold there had been a taking of the royalty interest under a 1952 lease of Mrs. Breithaupt and her sister, Mrs. Weiss. Now, the facts of this relate basically to the fact that in 1952, Ms. Breithaupt, Ms. Weiss executed an oil and gas lease to 4W Oil Company covering an 80-acre tract. Production was obtained on that lease from two wells. A third well was drilled and was non-productive. In January of 1981, the district acquired 67 acres of the 80 surface acres overlaying that mineral tract up to a level of 315 feet mean sea level for purposes of operation of a freshwater reservoir. In October of 1982, the construction on the dam for the reservoir began. In June of 1987, the district proceeded to condemn the working interest under the 1952 lease given by Ms. Breithaupt and Ms. Weiss to 4W Oil Company. And they did condemn the working interest under that lease. On June 30 of 1987, production ceased because the water district plugged and abandoned the well. This is the date upon which the trial court held that the water district had inversely condemned the royalty interest under the 1952 lease of Ms. Weiss and Ms. Breithaupt. Subsequent to that time...
Do you agree that that's correct or not?
Yes, sir. We agree that that was correct. At that time, the royalty interest was effectively condemned, and, as the record reflects, an offer was made to Ms. Breithaupt and to Ms. Weiss based on a proportionate an award ratio off of the working interest award to 4W Oil Company, which had been tried. They refused that tender, but we do not argue with the holding of the district court that the plugging and abandoning of the well under the 1952 lease did in fact inversely condemn the interest of Ms. Breithaupt and Ms. Weiss. Now, in October of 1987, Ms. Weiss and Ms. Breithaupt executed a 99-year paid-up lease to the Bar J.B. Company. And this lease was made effective back to January 1587. And I want to apologize to the court because I made a mistake in the application for writ of error. in what is filed here, and I have referred to that as a January 15, 87 lease. Examination of plaintiff's exhibit 3A and 4 disclosed that that lease was executed in October of 1987, and I apologize for that mistake. But anyway, this lease was leased to Bar J.B. Company. Who is Bar J.B. Company? Bar J.B. Company is a corporation owned 50-50 between Mr. James A. Breithoff and his mother, Frances Breithoff, who is one of the lessors under the lease. Mr. Breithoff is president, his mother is vice president, and his wife is the secretary. That company also owns a partial interest in what I'll refer to as the Fullwood lease in a few moments. It's also important to note that that 150% of that lease was subsequently assigned later to a corporation known as Haupt Inc., which is also a plaintiff, which was formed in August of 1988 and which is wholly owned by Mrs. Frances Breithoff. Now, the district had a policy since 87, and in 88 amended an ordinance to specifically speak to oil and gas operations in the vicinity of or in the reservoir. And the purpose of that ordinance, clearly empowered by the Texas statute, the purpose of that ordinance was to protect the freshwater drinking supply from pollution. And that ordinance required oil and gas operators and others to take precautions to prevent such pollution. The Bar J.B. lease, which I talked about, executed in October of 87, was finally recorded in mid-April of 1988. In August of 88, Haupt Inc., the wholly owned corporation by Mrs. Breithoff, was formed. Then Bar J.B. Company attempted to move in on one of the old existing well bores located on the 80 acre. Inquiry was made of them as to what steps they intended to take to protect the fresh water supply in the reservoir. There was no reply. The district then sought a temporary restraining order and then sought a temporary injunction against Bar J.B. Company drilling the well on the surface of the tract because of its concerns on pollution. In the temporary injunction hearing in that matter, Mr. Breithoff testified that he had no intention of doing anything to protect the fresh water supply. If the water ran over the wellhead, that was the district's problem, and he would suggest that the district get the water off the wellhead. He absolutely refused to indicate that he would take any preventive measures. The trial court in that case granted the temporary injunction. That case was consolidated with the cases before you here today, and at the conclusion of the evidence, the trial court granted a permanent injunction against JRB Oil Company, Bar J.B. Oil Company, from drilling on the surface of the tract. Now, after that temporary injunction was entered, Mr. Breithoff individually purchased a 1/6 mineral interest underneath this same 80-acre tract from a trust of his uncle's that was held by a bank. And then he then leased to Haupt Inc., his mother's wholly owned company, without bonus or other consideration, his 1/6 interest. Finally, in May of 1989, the lake reached the 315 feet mean sea level. At the time of the temporary injunction, the testimony is the water was no further than a quarter of a mile away from the location of the drilling, and I think there was even some testimony that was as close as 90 feet to the location of the drilling for the well. The district court, after considering all of these facts, found that the district had not inversely condemned the minerals or the interests of the plaintiffs, with the exception of the two royalty owners under the 52 lease, because there were adequate means of access to the mineral estate. And the court went on to hold that what the district did in obtaining the temporary injunction was an application of the district's police power to prevent pollution of fresh water, and there was therefore not compensable as a taking. When we got this case to the Court of Appeals, the Court of Appeals reversed the trial court and found as a matter of law that the inundation of water on this tract without regard to other reasonable means of access constitutes a taking as a matter of law, that taking occurred at the time of the inundation in May of 1989, and even though Mrs. Breithaupt and Mrs. Weiss had not appealed from the district court's determination with regard to their royalty interest, they reversed as to the whole matter. Now, it's our position that while we recognize that the question of whether there has been a taking by virtue of inverse condemnation is stated by this court on many occasions to be a law question, the fact of the matter is that there are underlying fact determinations which we contend are judged, should be judged by this court and should have been judged by the Court of Appeals in the same manner as any other fact determination when it's in a bench trial or where it's been a jury trial and you've got a jury issue, that the question of the application of those facts to the law to determine whether there has been an inverse condemnation is a question for the court. I think it's referred to in the cases as a question of law. I would submit to you that the application to the facts as found is a proper function of law.
Mr. Atlin, let me just see if I understand. There are several references to a top lease. And
top lease.
Let me tell you what I understand the facts to be, and correct me if I'm wrong.
All right, sir.
You've got some land that's owned by some folks, and you have both the surface and the mineral interest. And I'm not interested in the surface interest at this point, but it seems to me a driller has to get permission to drill on the surface of the land, correct or not? If I think a mineral interest to go drill, what arrangements do I have to make with the surface owner in order to have access to the land to drill?
I have a right, as the owner of the mineral estate, I have the right either personally or through a drilling contractor that I send on the property to make reasonable use of the surface of the tract in order to explore the mineral estate with due regard to the rights of the surface owner.
Okay, there we go. Now, someone comes in and condemns the surface.
Correct.
Does that automatically condemn the mineral interest? No.
No, as a matter of fact, it does not. Supreme Court, this court has held it does not.
What we have is a situation now that the district determined it was not going to condemn what? What did it determine?
Well, the district did not condemn at the time it condemned the working interest under the 4W Oil Company lease. It did not simultaneously condemn the royalty interest and the executive right that went along with that royalty interest, which is the right to grant additional leases.
The respondents in the case argued that the Getty doctrine, or the accommodation doctrine, however you refer to it, it can apply to government agencies, government sovereign. What's your response to that?
Well, my response to that is certainly I can't tell you that Getty addressed that because that wasn't the situation. That was two private parties, but there's certainly no reason. If you go back and look at Getty, what Getty is saying is look, your property interest and your right to reasonable access to the minerals and your right to use the surface for that is in fact a right that is moderated by the requirement that you have due regard in those surface operations for the activities of the surface owner.
The difference is that when you have private owners, one cannot take the other's interest. There must be bargaining. But when the government is involved, you have the power of condemnation.
Yes, sir, but I think that the result, if you say that, Justice Eck, I think the result of saying that because you have eminent domain, that makes it different. What you're saying to companies with eminent domain is you must always acquire the maximum estate. That has not been the law in Texas. As a matter of fact, I think everybody on this court knows that the law of eminent domain in the state of Texas is that the condemnor is normally viewed as condemning the smallest interest that will carry out the purposes of the condemning authority. So I would say that to say that simply because you have the right of eminent domain somehow does not implicate the Getty decision, I think is in error, Justice Hatton. I'm not sure.
No. Okay. When the condemnation of the working owner interest was had,
right,
but not the royalty owner's interest,
right,
could it be said that the only thing that was condemned was the access to the surface?
I don't think you can say that. I'd love to, but I don't think you can say that. And the reason I say that is that what we condemned was the 7/8 working interest under the 4W lease. When that lease terminated, without having acquired the royalty interest and the executive right that goes along with it, I have to say to you, Your Honor, that I still believe that was an outstanding interest. That was an outstanding interest in Ms. Breithoff and in Ms. Weiss. Because those are separated. The working interest is separated from the power to grant leases and to engage in the activities of a royalty owner.
So the power still existed.
The power still existed.
Grant leases.
That's correct.
And the question is, can the condemning authority force the change of location of the, well, give me an analogy. I want to condemn, I've got someone who's got a gas station on the corner of some property that's otherwise been condemned by a turnpike authority.
Right.
And so now they've got to move the gas station.
Right.
Are they entitled to be compensated for the portion of the taking that forces them to move the gas station?
Well, I wish I could tell you that I thought I could rationalize all the cases on these issues, and I'm not sure I can. They are compensated. They are entitled to compensation to the extent that the taking has rendered the value of the property less. I don't know whether you're talking total taking or partial taking. Normally, in connection with moving costs and things like that, those may be factors that can be considered, but they're not separately awardable unless the statute does it. But I think it's important here, and I think maybe I'm understanding a little bit of where you're coming from. I think it's important for the court to know here that there is no evidence that a well on the 13 acres of this area that was not inundated, not taken by the district, there is no evidence that a well drilled on that location would not have made a commercial well and drained the oil and gas from underneath these premises. There also is no showing that you could not directionally drill it, and as a matter of fact, the evidence is directly to the contrary because Halfdink, in fact, did directionally drill. They didn't make a well. But the testimony was that wasn't because there was anything wrong with directional drilling. It simply was there either wasn't oil there or they had hit in a crevice containing water. So all what we're saying is that there is plenty of evidence for the trial court to have found that there was access to the minerals by these owners, and therefore that there had been no inverse condemnation. And secondly, that there were reasonable alternatives to simply drilling on the surface of the property as they sought to.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Frank Douglas, present argument for respondent.
May it please the court, I'm Frank Douglas, representing the mineral owners who've had their private property taken without compensation. In Texas, that's called inverse condemnation. The water district here created a scheme by which they would take these mineral interests without having to pay for them. In 1980, they represented to the owners out here that they were going to not condemn the oil and gas operations. They were not going to interfere with the oil and gas operations and would even pay the extra cost for the oil and gas operations. And based on that, they acquired the surface of the lands that they were going to inundate here. In 1981, they acquired the surface to this 80 acres that's involved here. It may have been just 67, but they acquired the surface of the tract that we're involved with here. And of course, their reason for doing and going in that direction was to avoid the cost of condemning the mineral interests that were out there with reference to the producing oil and gas wells. Later, the Water District changed that policy, and they decided that what they'd do is condemn the working interest, not the mineral interest, but the working interest in the oil and gas leases. And then they'd plug the commercially producing wells that were on those tracts, knowing that the mineral interest that was represented by the oil and gas lease would go back to the mineral owners, and the mineral owners would have their full rights to drill and develop and produce their property. When a mineral interest owner gives a lease, he gives a determinable fee to the oil and gas lessee. That's for a period of time or until commercial production ceases. And so the mineral owner, when he or she gives this oil and gas lease, retains the minerals, they retain the royalty, and they retain the right of reverter from this oil and gas lease that they previously given. And when these oil and gas wells were plugged, everyone knew under Texas law that that working interest, that interest under that oil and gas lease, went back to the mineral owners. They had full right to develop. Originally, Lillian and Francis Breyerhoff gave a lease in 1952. Ms. Francis is here in the courtroom. And producing oil and gas wells were drilled on that lease and produced for 35 years. On a surface basis, that is a ground level basis, straight wells that were there. In 1987, after the surface of this tract, as I already mentioned, was condemned in 1981, in 1987, after the district had changed their oil and gas policy, they came in and condemned only the working interest in that lease. And then 21 days later, they plugged the two commercial wells that were producing from the lease. Upon this plugging, Lillian and Francis, again, had full mineral interest, had the right to drill and produce oil at from a ground level and a straight well situation. They leased their land. Now, a top lease doesn't matter. It's immaterial in this. A top lease had to be given at the time because the oil and gas lease was still in effect. And a top lease, to be effective, you've got to have a term of years in it and also provide it doesn't go into effect until the other oil and gas lease expires. Otherwise, our courts have held that it violates the rule against perpetuity. And I hope the court asks me no questions about the rule against perpetuity. But that's the only instance I know when it applies. Then the Water District comes out and enjoins the lessees, from Francis and Lillian, from operating on this tract of land when they had full right to do so as far as developing oil and gas production. The Water District says that in May of 89, the water completely inundates this tract, completely inundates the wells, producing wells that were there. And so we have a situation where the reservoir is in place then. The two issues as framed by the Water District are that there's the issue of whether there is an inverse condemnation, and second is the issue of whether the doctrine of accommodation is set out in the Getty versus Jones excuses their taking of this property by putting water on it. The Water District has argued both their doctrine of accommodation and the police power to try to defeat inverse condemnation. I think the cases are clear by this court, and there have been a number of them written, that inverse condemnation involves three situations. It's a total restriction for a temporary or permanent period of time. That's the first type. The second type is a partial restriction for a permanent period of time, and that's us. And the third type is when there's an illegal, unnecessary, unreasonable use. That's the unduly delayed category. That's the third type. We're in the second type of inverse condemnation that's here. There is no question that my clients have had a substantial and material restriction of their access to their minerals on a permanent basis when they flooded this tract of land. The water district put 24 feet of water over our wells that we have on this tract of land.
But if we apply the accommodation doctrine, you lose.
I'm sorry.
If we apply the accommodation doctrine as set out in Getty, you lose.
No, we don't.
Why do you not?
Because if the accommodation doctrine applies, I don't think it does, and I'll set out later why it doesn't. But if it does apply, we were the surface users. We were the ones that have been out there 35 years producing this tract of land. And they're the only way that the district got their interest was to condemn and to plug those wells, commercially producing wells, to plug them. They didn't have the water on our well heads when we went out there to work on this track. That was our surface use, the minerals owners' surface use. And so therefore, if the doctrine of accommodation applies, they need to accommodate us, not us accommodate them, is what it amounts to in that regard.
With regard to opposing counsel's suggestion that there was plenty of evidence for the trial court to conclude that you still had access to these minerals, is it your position that, not that you don't have some access, but as you just said, that there's a partial permanent restriction on your access?
That's correct. The courts say that in the Teague case, I believe it was, that this court said, look, we've said before that if you had reasonable access, there hadn't been any taking. And the court said, we're going to modify that. That's really not right. We've seen enough cases now that we know that if you've had a substantial and material restriction for a permanent period of time, that is a taking and an inverse condemnation. That's that second classification that's there. And that's been the law here since 1960, whenever it was that this court, or 70, when this court wrote that opinion. There is no trial court finding that there was reasonable access to minerals, but even if there had been, that doesn't preclude us from it being an inverse condemnation. There certainly is no trial court finding that the mineral owner's right to access had not been substantially and materially restricted. That's the test. The Court of Appeals, the Waco Court of Appeals, clearly sets that out, and they say that in as clear a language as you can see, and I compliment the Waco Court of Appeals. Their opinion, the law is sharp, and the citations are fine in the sense of their Supreme Court citations in each instance, and they say that it's not whether there remains reasonable access or even access, but there has to be a substantial and material impairment of that access.
And the reason why there's a substantial and material restriction on access is because you now are compelled to drill a directional well?
That's one of them, yes, sir. The other is that are from platforms. The testimony in this before the court there from the four engineers that testified was that the damage ranged from about 1.2 to approximately $2 million, and that came from the lack of access, the fact that there was no marine drilling equipment. It came from the expense and the risk of directional drilling. All those engineers testified. Even the water district's expert testified that there was $1.2 to $1.6 million worth of recoverable oil under this track, and that by virtue of putting the lake out there afterwards, it was practically almost zero, I believe was his testimony that it had. And it comes from the cutting off or the restriction of the access that the mineral owner has to drill straight wells and to produce them. These are pumping wells. You can't, when you pump in a directional drill well, the expenses go up dramatically. When you operate in water operations, the expenses go up dramatically.
Mr. Allen says none of that's in the record. Mr. said that there was not anything in the record talking about the expense of directional drilling or water drilling or any of that sort of stuff in which you could evaluate the value of the
property. Perhaps they didn't read the same record I did, and the Waco Court of Appeals read. It's clear in there, those experts testified as to that the reason for the diminution, the reason for the difference in value was the cost and expense of directional drilling, cost and expense of water operations, and the cost and expense and the risk involved in getting to those minerals that have all been permanently restricted by the water being there. So I think that's clear evidence, and the Waco court thought it was conclusive evidence. The district court wasn't even looking to that. The district court had a wrong test in mind. It thought if there was any excess, that it was okay. And that's just not the law in the state of Texas.
Was counsel correct that the record shows that your client's position was that they did not need to take any steps whatsoever to prevent water pollution out there?
As I understand Mr. Breithoff's testimony in the temporary injunction hearing, he stated that he was going to develop just like the track had been developed, and if the water district wanted to do something to protect that water, which was not there, wasn't there on the location where he was as far as drilling the well is concerned, then it was up to them to do that. And that's what inverse condemnation is if they make him pay those expenses, and they've in effect acquired those interests, and they haven't paid him for compensation for that.
One other clarification on the restriction on access. Is it your contention that the evidence conclusively establishes that these would not be commercial wells if access was obtained by directional drilling with the increased expenses associated with that?
With three of the experts, that's what they said. One of them said there would still be about $900,000 worth of hydrocarbons that you could produce even with these additional costs and expenses. That meant about $1.8 million in damages that would have been accessible to the water district for that. In other words, they could still produce about $900,000, and that, at least to me, that sounds pretty good in the sense of it being commercial.
If you couldn't drill a commercial directional well, why didn't they try?
If you couldn't drill a commercial well, they did try to drill that, and they were unsuccessful.
And if you couldn't do that, why try?
Couldn't do that.
If you can't drill,
well, I would agree. If you can't, that's what they decided. Then once they tried, that the risk was too great to try to directionally drill to get to the reservoir.
But if they had hit with the well they did drill, I assume they thought that would have been commercial.
Yes, they sure tried to get a commercial well.
Was the fact that that well didn't produce related to its slant drilling, directional drilling?
The engineer wasn't sure. There are two possible explanations. You don't know for sure. One, it may not have actually gotten to where the production formation was. And the second one is that by virtue of directional drilling, you're not able to get the cement all the way around the pipe because the pipe lays on the hole as opposed to being hung straight up and down, essentially straight up and down in a straight hole. So you don't get a good cement bond. And water from other formations comes in. It's called channel. And so that's what he wasn't sure. And in all candor to the court, said into the opposing counsel, I can't tell you which it is. But it's that kind of risk in directional drilling that raises and increases your cost and expenses of developing, and in effect takes your minerals. I think this court has addressed the question of when you have a condemning authority. Whether they can use the doctrine of accommodation. The court did it even before they announced the doctrine of accommodation, about a year before the Getty versus Jones opinion, the Banna case came out, Chambers, Liberty County, Navigation District versus Banna. And there, all the interest was owned by one set of owners. And the Navigation District came in and said, we're just going to condemn the surface, and we're reserving to the mineral owners their right to ingress and egress and all the development rights and so forth. And those mineral owners said, wait a minute now, you've taken my minerals. And this court said, no, they haven't. This court said that they haven't taken your minerals. You still have them. You can still develop. Not only that, but you have superiority and priority over the condemning authority to use that surface. And if the condemning authority needs that your use of that surface later on, it can come for a second taking. That's clear under Texas law. But not only that, the court went on to say that if the condemnor, the water district here, later interferes with our exercise of our common law right to use the surface without compensation, then such interference will constitute a second taking by inverse condemnation.
Do you run into any difficulty with your argument that you were aware that the working owner interests had been condemned, that is, the access to the surface had been condemned, and now you are in a position where your people run in and try to do something that actually now they come and claim is damaged because now they're prohibited from doing that? Do you run into some difficulty with the actions of your parties increasing their damages? Like, I know they've got a plan out there for that facility, and I know they've condemned it. They've already cleared the land, but they didn't get rid of my opportunity to lease it, so I'm going to release and I'm going to build a building, and now they've got to condemn it again. Do you not have a problem with trying to argue that you put yourself into harm's way on this?
I don't have any problem because I think this court has very said that from the, when they announce they're going to condemn something and when they actually condemn it, whatever damage occurs in there, the condemning authority is not liable for it. So I, as a private property owner, have the right to go out there and use my property the way that I am entitled to do so until it is condemned. There are a lot of instances when these announcements have been made and they've never gone out there and done that. I lived here in Austin long enough to hear about this airport out at Manor that someday may get there, but it never has. And so I think that it's clear that if you're going to protect the private property owner's rights, the private property owner has to be able to use the property in accordance with the rights that he has. And if you're going to say the fact that I'm going to announce that I'm going to condemn your interest, they in effect said we weren't, and then later on said we're going to only condemn
the property. I know I said that, but they'd already eliminated the working owner interest. They'd already condemned the use of that surface.
Under that lease, what they should have done then, if they didn't want that tract developed, is to condemn the mineral. They didn't condemn the mineral, only the working interest. And the only reason they did that is where they could go out and plug these commercial wells. That's the reason they did that. And then they were hoping to get the lake in place and before these minerals went out there to try to develop.
The only reason you were that there's inverse condemnation here in the sense that you're prevented from horizontal drilling because of the injunction? Does that bar your drilling from the platform or otherwise?
No, that's not what the restriction is. The restriction is the physical restriction. If there'd been no rules and regulations, and they put this lake here, we'd still have to have either marine operations on a platform or direction to drill.
Right. And is it your contention that marine drilling, I guess, to use that term, is also commercially infeasible?
That's the testimony here in this record.
And it's of the same nature as the earlier testimony that it would, if not be impossible, it would certainly be the value of the minerals would be radically diminished.
Right. Impractical, high risk, and expensive to the point where you just can't do it. That's what it meant. Let me mention the four items that I think also clear here, and the court is way ahead of me on a couple of them, that tell me at least that they're good arguments. My experience has always been that when a lawyer starts talking about public policy, watch out because he doesn't have any law. I think I've got the law. But in addition, there are four, I think, very good reasons why the doctrine of accommodation to a condemnor, as indicated in the Banner case, should not apply here. First of all, it lets them take private property without paying just compensation. And secondly, they have an alternate available, I believe one of you has already suggested. They can condemn that property. They have that alternate available. A normal surface owner doesn't have that. The normal surface owner is subservient to the mineral estate. The mineral estate is the dominant estate. Mr. Ratliff has told you that the mineral owner can use as much of that surface as reasonably necessary and not pay that surface owner any compensation. The third reason is that the government can regulate that surface use. They can, and a normal surface owner can't do that. They can do that. And it permits the fourth reason is that the government, it permits the government authority to use the surface without due regard to the mineral owner, just as they have here. They just said that we're going to put our lake out there and you do whatever you want to with your minerals, as far as that's concerned, but the lake is there. Also, I think it's clear that the doctrine of accommodation just from a general policy standpoint should not apply to a condo owner, because it does let them acquire property that they would not otherwise be entitled to without going through the condemnation process. And the police power doesn't help them. Police power, as this court has already said in a number of cases, that the dichotomy between police power, saying I'm taking it under police power, versus what taking it under eminent domain is one that you no longer recognize. And we urge that the Court of Appeals, in fact, I urge the court to read the
Your
Court of Appeals.
Your time has expired. Right. To, are there any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear rebuttal argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. Justice Hecht, I think I misspoke a while ago when I said that the asked me whether the respondents said the accommodation doctrine didn't apply. The respondents in this case say that the accommodation doctrine doesn't apply. There is a case on application for writ involving Haupt Inc. also before this court, in which they urged upon and got the Waco court to apply, although in an upside-down manner, the doctrine of accommodation arising out of this same reservoir, arising out of the same contentions.
Is that the Fullwood case?
That is the Fullwood case, Your Honor, which is, as I say, on application for writ up here right now. So I'll say that these parties take the position it doesn't apply in this case, but it does apply in Fullwood. And what you need to know is all of the plaintiffs, excuse me, the two corporate plaintiffs and Mr. Breithoff in this case own interests in the Fullwood unit, which is the subject of that case.
Well, our primary focus is, of course, on this case. As you know, Mid-Continent Oil and Gas has filed a brief here suggesting that it's going to be far-reaching ramifications of extending the accommodation doctrine as you urge. Could you respond to their arguments?
Yes, sir. I think if I understand them, Justice Doggett, I'll respond to them. As I understand it, what they're saying is it's an extension because there is not a case that says that if a governmental owner, a governmental entity, is the surface owner, that the doctrine ought to apply. I would submit to you that despite what Mr. Douglas says about the policy reasons, I find that that makes no sense. If, in the Getty case, if Mr. Jones was not required to pay Getty to lower one of its pumping units 27 feet into the ground in order that his irrigation units might operate, then why should a governmental entity in the same circumstance be required to pay Getty Oil Company to lower its pumping unit 27 feet into the ground so that the municipal use can take place on that tract of land? And I'll submit to you that the amicus brief, I thought, never addressed the why. They simply said this court shouldn't extend it to a governmental entity. Mr. Douglas seems to argue that because a governmental entity has the power to condemn and presumably has the tax money to pay, that they ought to have to pay for an interest that a private lessor would not have to pay for. And I will submit to you, I think that is both bad policy, and I do not believe there's any support in the law for it. Now, the fact of the matter is, I need to emphasize something because I'm afraid I did a very poor job in the initial presentation. These plaintiffs in this case had the right to develop the minerals on this tract by drilling on dry land immediately adjacent to the plug holes for 18 months in the case of Bar JB companies and 8 months, well, that's wrong, Haupt, 8 months for Haupt Inc. They had that period of time. That's exactly what happened on the Fullwood lease. They went in, they drilled it straight down, they drilled it adjacent to the plug well, they made a connection, they put in the necessary installation to make sure that the production facility was above the level of the water, and they're producing that well at a rate of 60 or 70 barrels a day. Now, these plaintiffs didn't do that. At the time when they had that opportunity and moved in, and the district simply asked, what reasonable protections are you going to make against pollution of this reservoir? They said, none, that's your problem. So they passed up an opportunity where they could have accessed the minerals exactly the same way According to Mr. Douglas, they could have accessed them for 30 years. Now, secondly, Mr. Douglas never dealt with the 13 acres that is not inundated and the fact that this record is devoid of evidence that a well drilled straight down on that 13 acres on dry land would not have encountered the productive formation and produced oil and gas attributable to this tract. He says that the evidence established that directional drilling was too expensive. I will submit, if you read the testimony of the experts in this case, one, they were basing their estimates of cost on being able to re-enter the old well bores that had been plugged. Well, it turned out they couldn't have done that. There's testimony in the record about why they couldn't have done it. They couldn't drill out the bottom plug. So, first of all, their estimates are wrong because they're based on a premise that they couldn't accomplish. Secondly, no one testified to the increased cost of simply directionally drilling. They just simply said, well, without water there, and if you're able to drill it straight up on the ground, I'd say there's $3 million out there, I'd say there's $1.6 million, or I'd say there's $1.8 million. But once the water's there, you can't drill it, no marine equipment, therefore it's zero. Nobody really said it.
Isn't that the proper measure of damages?
No, sir, I don't think it is. Not when the assumption is that simply because there's water out there, you can't do it. All I'm saying is you ought to examine the testimony, because I think, as opposed to saying directionally drilling itself is prohibitively expensive, they just arrived at a conclusion, which I believe the trial judge was free to reject, that simply wasn't an alternative.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. That concludes the argument. In the second clause, the court will take another recess.
The audience, please rise.